Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Dirty Giants podcast. We got an awesome episode this week. We have Colby Millen. Colby is a giant shed finder. I don't know anyone who's found more big sheds than him. Multiple sets over 200 and even a couple sets over 250 inches, including Dino, who was like mid 270s. We're going to hear that story today on how he picked it up and kind of how he went about finding those sheds. I can't wait to put this episode out. So thanks for tuning in and I hope you guys enjoy it.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Dirty Giants podcast. Man, we've got a really cool episode. I think he is the shed king of our generation, to be honest. I don't know anyone else who picks up bigger sheds, more sheds than him. Colby Millen. So thanks for getting on, Colby. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to talk to you and pick your brain.
Yeah, of course. I really appreciate getting on here. I'm excited. It's going to be a good one.
Sweet. Well, I want to get into shed hunting, but before we do, I kind of wanted to hear a little bit of the story of the buck you killed this year. You killed your first archery buck. Yep. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And it was a pretty good one. Do you want to kind of just kind of tell us the story on that and how it all happened?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, got to put in for the draw. It's just a general buck. But anymore, just drawing a general tag seems like a chore these days. So you get excited when you draw a general archery season tag. Unfortunately, that's kind of an exciting event. So yeah, a little bit of a backstory. So I mean, I've been bow hunting my whole life since I was a little kid, you know, going with my dad and always been shooting bows. And, I've done a ton of hunting, you know, for mule deer. I've killed a few elk with my bow. So it's not my first animal, but it's my first buck. And
okay.
I've been very picky, with the deer I want to kill. I mean, when I was younger, you know, I just wasn't a very good bow hunter. So, you know, I've missed some small deer in my day. And so this year when I drew that tag, my main goal was to try to find a buck that I was happy with and then, you know, get the tag filled. So I was somewhat lower in my standards of what I probably would have shot a little bit in the past. But so my main goal this year was to find a good buck and get him killed. So as soon as I drew that tag, you know, started shooting the bow, getting ready, and then, you know, summer comes around, I just tried to scout as much as I could, you know, getting off work during the week, come home, grab the family, head out, you know, just try to get some glassing in, trying to look at new spots. But a lot of the good spots usually mean there's a lot of people. So I was trying to find those areas that may not have had as many people, but generally don't have as many deer, but just trying to find a deer that I could kill too. Cause I've learned that the hard way. You can find those giant bucks, but some of them are just not killable, you know?
Right. Right.
So spent a lot of time scouting and finally got into an area where we found quite a few deer, which kind of surprised me. And found, I don't know, I'd say five or six good shooter bucks. And this buck was probably number five out of the five or six that I would have shot. So he wasn't top of the list, but he made the list for sure. So we just kept going out, looking, finding them, trying to find out what their patterns were, kind of what they were doing. So I kind of got that dialed in, and then the hunt shows up. Opening day, had no luck, didn't see him. Opening night, didn't see him either. So, you know, went back the second day and actually had him spotted at first light with another deer that was actually really cool. I'd never seen before. And I would have shot, this specific deer I shot, I had a feeling he wasn't a really old buck. He had a lot of cool character, lots of points, and, you know, a couple of years ago, I probably would have let him go, hoping maybe, you know, he'd blow up, but as many people are hunting these days, as many hunts as there are, it's hard to let a general deer go that, you know, that's a good-looking buck, because you can't save him. And just kind of the way he patterned, I just had a feeling he wasn't going to make it through the hump. I'm sure somebody would have killed him.
Right.
So I told myself, you know, you can't just all let them all go because, I mean, the odds of me getting a tag next year and actually, you know, if the deer actually made it. So I was like, well, he's on my list. So I seen him the second morning and was had a play kind of put together that was going to work out. But these deer were weird. They were always bedding down in the middle of the night out in some open country. And so I was trying to, you know, kind of get set up on the tree line where they'd be heading. And I was in a pretty good spot. I could see him. He got up. He started feeding. This other buck was with him, was feeding. And then there was actually a group of deer that were leaving where they water. And they were just beelining it for the trees. And they were kind of cutting off this buck and this other buck. And the bucks that were coming, they weren't shooters. They were just decent deer.
Uh-huh.
And they actually fed right through these two bucks, and they were coming right at me. So they kind of busted me, kind of ruined my morning. So I'm like, okay, well, I know where they come out of the trees at night. So I figured, you know, Sunday night, I'll try to get set up right on the tree line and hope I pick the right ridge that he comes out on. It just seemed like at night they weren't even hitting the tree line till it was almost too dark to shoot. So I'm like, well, I have nothing else to do. I'll pick a tree and I'll go sit by it, and hopefully at dark he just comes out, you know, in the right spot at the right time. So I got in there real early and just tried to be real patient. Luckily the wind was right in my face, so I had my wind was good. And I mean, I had no expectations to see anything. I mean, it was like 100 degrees. That's just kind of how it is. Those deer don't like to move in the daylight. So I just sat there and waited. I was ranging some trees, you know, kind of getting familiar with my shooting lanes. Just, you know, replaying it in my head 100 times over. Because even where he was going to come out, there was another two or three bucks that were probably bigger that were an option that could have come out. So I was like, well, even if it's not that buck, it might be one that I'll shoot. So I got to be ready.
So, right.
Yeah, I got set up, and I was just waiting, and then next thing I know, I don't know what time it was, probably 7, because it was getting close to dark, so it was probably 7 or just after 7, I just catch some movement through the cedars, and I'm like, okay, something's coming, you know, calm down, get ready, because, you know, you're ready until you see something, then you get that buck fever setting in, so.
Yeah.
I'm kind of waiting, and I start seeing some antler, and I'm like, okay, and then I seen his one side, and I saw the end line, so I'm like, oh, it's that buck. I'm like, okay, I told myself I wouldn't pass him, so I can't let him go. So I got ready, got set up, and it was kind of meant to be. He just came to me right on the line, just perfect situation, perfect scenario. Just comes right to me. He stepped out at about 30 yards. And he was just feeding, just standing there. And I, like I say, in the past, you know, I've missed small deer and I've missed freaking giant deer, and it's always just those dumb mistakes. You know what I mean? You don't take your time. You don't check off your list. So I've tried to keep a mental list in my head. You know, draw back.
Uh-huh.
You know, kisser button, peep sight. Sight housing, pins, you know, just kind of run through that list of, like, relax, hit all your points. So I did all that, felt good, put that pin right on him, touched off, and I just watched that arrow sail right through him, and it was like one of those just feelings that, you know what I mean? I mean, you've killed some giant deer with your bow, so you know exactly what I mean. It's like, once that happens and you see it, it's just like, it was awesome. Feeling I'll never forget, for sure. That arrow blew right through him, perfect shot. It was pretty awesome.
That's so cool. That's crazy. I didn't realize that's how you killed it. I actually had never heard the story. So that takes some dedication to just be like, well, I'm just going to sit here and see what happens.
Yeah, the tough thing was that same morning where I'd seen the buck I killed and the other decent buck, the number one buck I wanted to kill was actually with those two bucks, but instead
uh-huh.
of feeding towards the trees, he literally just fed out into the middle of the open, into, you know, no man's land, and just disappeared, which that really sucked because I was like, oh, great, cool, the giant buck. He's right there with these two. He's going to come this way. Like, maybe I'll get a chance. And he literally just did the complete opposite for no reason at all. Nothing buggered him. He literally just got up out of his bed and went the complete opposite direction. So that was kind of a kick in the guts. And he was a big, heavy, probably 32-inch wide 4-point, just all frame, just an absolute.
Are you serious? Jeez. Yeah,
God of a buck. So that, it was hard to shoot. I mean, the deer I shot's awesome. I can't complain for my first year with my bow. He's not a monster. He's a gorgeous deer. He honestly probably needed another year or two. But like I say, general tag, first year with a bow, I couldn't let him go. If I had a rifle tag, I wouldn't have shot him because I think after he stripped, he would have shrank a little more. But yeah, it was tough knowing that big buck was there. You know what I mean? But I'm pumped. I have no regrets. So I'm hoping in this next year maybe I can draw dedicated and maybe he's still out there.
Yeah, that's cool. It kind of seems like, at least on like these units that we hunt, like a lot of the time that's where you're kind of hunting those big bucks, is like there's an open sage flat or open flat, and you're just trying to get them before they get into the thick trees. Like, it's not like you're not finding these, at least me, I'm not finding these big bucks like where you can glass all day and have a chance to like glass them up and put a stalk on them in their bed. Like, I'm kind of doing the same thing on like the bucks I'm trying to hunt, especially on the archery. Is just you're sitting a tree line and hope they either are coming to it or leaving it, and you're in the right place.
Yeah, for sure. These deer down here in southern Utah, they don't. I mean, if you show up 30 minutes after the sun's up, they're gone. You won't even see a deer. You got to be right place, right time. Like, I mean, when I was younger, I spent a ton of time scouting, and I would see, I mean, back then, you would see tons of good bucks, but I wasn't prepared as I am now as far as shooting and, like, mentally disciplined. Back when I was younger, you know, I'd shoot my bow before the hunt. I wasn't prepared. I was loud, noisy. I'd get buck fever too bad. You know what I mean? So, like, I'm way more prepared now. And so I kind of went back to the roots of spend as much time scouting as I could, because I went from scouting a ton to where I'd get a tag and I wouldn't scout as much because I felt like I already knew the area, and I'd go out there. And if you don't know the deer's habits like really well, it makes it that much harder because they're not feeding an hour, 2 hours off the sunlight. Like maybe some, like, you know, those high mountain muleys are. These desert deer, when it's, you know, August, it could be 100 degrees. So they're moving.
Right.
So you really got to know which, you know, which draw they're going up every morning, where they're bedding, you know, in the evening. So I think that my biggest thing was as much time as I spent driving out there, you know, multiple days a week, all summer long, really trying to figure out what they did. And that was kind of, in my opinion, the reason why I actually got a pretty good chance on that buck, is because I'm like, I know he comes out of this draw every day. So he may not come out till dark, so I might not see him. But if he does, you know, I'm going to be in the right spot. And it luckily just worked out that way.
Yeah. No, I think you're 100% right. And that's what's so hard about the archery, too, is like those days are so long. And I feel like your hunts are like 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes
oh,
in the evening,
rough.
And
yeah, it's
you're
rough.
Kind
my
of
dad,
just wasting your time, like, during
yeah.
the day. Like, you don't want to go in there and try to track them out with a bow.
No,
that's
going to
ruin everything. It's going to ruin all your scouting, like you said. So you're just
anyone that goes in the thick trees after deer, you know, like in the middle of the day, they're a lot better hunter than I am. I can't be that dang quiet.
Yeah,
my dad used to be a hardcore bow hunter, which is why I got into bow hunting. I mean, he was all in on bow hunting. But nowadays, I tell him, you know, put in for a bow, get a new bow, let's go. And he's like, no, bow hunting's a young man's sport. Getting up at 4 a.m. and going to bed at midnight, he's like, that's not for me anymore. So, and that's what it is. I mean, you're up at 3, 4 in the morning, and the hunt, you don't go to bed till midnight. It's rough.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's a cool story though. I never, like I said, heard it. So it's kind of fun to hear that. And I can't wait to see what you turn up next year. Hopefully you get another tag and
I'm your Giants. I draw dedicated. I think I have enough points. So I'm hoping a couple of these bucks, you know, made it through. And I'm going to set that buck as kind of my benchmark. I've never really scored him, but I have an idea of what I think he scores. So he's my benchmark. I won't shoot anything smaller than that now. So I'm going to try to hold out. I'm going to try to hold out for at least, you know, that mid to high 180s plus type deer. Cause I've done that my whole life. I've passed 170. I don't know if I've ever really passed a 180 buck, but I've passed those 170 deer, and I blame that on my shed hunting. So
yeah, well, that's kind of what I was going to lead into. Like, you're no stranger to giant bucks and putting.
And that's
your hands
that's
on
my
giant
problem.
Bucks.
I have shed mounts that are well right. over 200. So then I look at it and I'm like, how can I shoot a 170 deer and put it next to this 200-inch buck? Like,
yeah,
you can't
bring any deer in your house without it looking small, like with all your sheds and.
Yeah, stuff. So that's kind of what's ruined my ability to shoot decent bucks. But I'm kind of over that now. So I'm like, okay, I can handle, as long as it's with a bow, I can shoot those 170 type deer. Just, I mean, that rush you get with a bow is. There's nothing that even comes close to it. So this next year, I'm hoping for 180 plus. If it was like an old troll, you know, big heavy bases, couple points, it'd be hard to pass. But I'm gonna try to hold out for that 180 plus, and I will see. I don't know. We're not getting any rain or snow anytime soon, so horn growth might be a little rough next year. But I guess
I know. I'm nervous. Everywhere that I've even like been out looking, like even ponds that usually hold tons of water are empty.
Yeah, it's kind of
it's
sad.
Not looking,
kind of worried about
it's
it.
Not looking good. So I kind of wanted to transition now a little to more of the shed hunting. Like I said it in your intro, and I'm not trying to embarrass you, but like you're the best shed hunter around when it comes to big bucks. Like I don't know anyone who's picked up more big buck sheds, especially like recently, than you. Like some of those guys that picked up all those big sheds before it was really a thing, but like you have multiple sets over 200, and I just kind of wanted to get like your tactics and then hear a couple of the stories. But
hey, just wanted to give you guys a quick rundown of our big shed contest we're doing this year. There's going to be two categories, biggest set and biggest single. And you have to be wearing a Dirty Giants hat or some sort of Dirty Giants merchandise to win. So go ahead and get on and get your Dirty Giants gear. It's dirtygiantspodcast.com is where you can find it. I'll link it in the podcast as well as our social medias will have it. But the rules are, like I said, you have to be wearing Dirty Giants gear in one of your pictures to win. We're just doing mule deer sheds. Sheds have to be picked up this year, and we're going to look into the top sheds to validate that. I know it's going to be kind of hard, but I think we have a few ways to make sure that it was picked up this year. And then we're going to personally measure the top sheds to make sure whoever does have the biggest shed will actually win. And all those photos must be submitted by May 31st. So once you find your shed, you have your hat on, send it to dirtygiantsheds@gmail.com, and that's how you enter. We have some really cool prizes. The biggest set is going to get a free shoulder mount from Strip Taxidermy, $250 to Art of the Hunt, and a free mini muley of your set. The biggest single is going to get an Antler Tech clone of the shed you found, so it'll be like you actually have a set. Free mini muley of your shed, and $250 to Art of the Hunt. We're actually going to do a random winner too, just to have another winner. So that's going to get you a free mini muley of your shed and $100 to Art of the Hunt. You can enter as many sheds as you want. So we just want to kind of promote you getting out and finding big sheds. We want to see the big sheds found, and kind of a way to help us make a little extra money on our hats and our gear, so we can put it back into the podcast and hopefully get bigger and better. I appreciate the support, and let me know if you guys have any questions.
Like, are you consistently, like, shed hunting specific deer? Like, you're not just going out there and hoping to find sheds, or how does that kind of work for you?
Well, I appreciate the title of great shed hunter. I try to be humble, but I do feel like I do put in a lot of time and a lot of work. I honestly try to consider myself as a very good shed hunter, which might be a little boastful, but that's why I do it.
Not at all.
I used to do it for fun, but now I try to do it to find the next, you know, biggest, baddest buck just for the fame of finding them. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we'll kind of go back in the past. So long time ago, like early 2000s, that's kind of when I kind of got into it. We'd pick up sheds while we were deer hunting, you know, I'm rifle hunting with my dad when I was a kid, you know, we'd come across a horn, you know, horn or two, we'd pick them up, but we never really went looking. And then I remember one day I come home from school and my dad's like, you got to watch this movie. I got these DVDs, blah, blah, blah. And it was Muley Crazy Movies, you know, Ryan Hatch, Volume 1, Volume 2, Volume 3.
Oh, right.
Watch them, and it just blows your mind. You see the horns that Ryan used to pick up, and we're just like, oh, my hell. We got to start shed hunting. We got to go out and pick up horns. So this is like, you know, 2002, and I don't know, I was like 10 back then, so we knew a couple people that kind of picked up horns but weren't real shed hunters, so they're kind of like, you know, go this place called Coral Pink Sand Dunes, you know, there's a lot of deer out there. So we're like, all right. So we literally went out to Coral Pinks back in 2002, and we, you know, just started cleaning up horns. Like, I mean, the Coral Pinks is no secret, so
right.
We, you know, you pull into the main parking lot, and back then the main parking lot wasn't a parking lot, it was a road. There was no, you go there now, you there's like RV hookups there now, but you know, you pull in there. It was a road, not a parking lot. And just from the highway, we were picking up brown horn, nothing big, you know, just good 4-point horns, just browns. So we're like, wow, you know, we got to keep coming back. So the next year we go back and we started to kind of figure the place out. That was back before Onyx. And honestly, I Google Earth might've been around, but it was terrible. I remember the first time I looked at Google Earth, probably 20-something years ago, you could barely see anything. It was all so blurry. So we started, my dad would buy maps, like a map book of Utah, Arizona, and it would just, you know, have a page. The page was a section of the state, and, you know, to look at roads and springs. So that was our Onyx or our Google Earth. So we started kind of, you know, figuring places out, which it sounds hilarious. We'd literally take a page and be like, oh, circle a spring, or like, let's check this road out. So we just spent a ton of time. At that time, we spent a ton of time out there in the sands. And for the sands, we actually did really good. I mean, we'd have 45, 50 shed days out there, all browns. We'd pick up,
oh my gosh,
50 plus brown horns. We found this, we hit this one canyon that, I guess it would have been 13. I was 13 or 14, because I remember it was the first year I could deer hunt. We go out, hit this point, and we just go right up this ridge, and we picked up like a 185 hard white set, a 180 hard white set. Get up on this rim. We heard the glass this canyon. I remember we were sitting there glassing, and I got a little antsy. I'm not real patient, so I got up. Well, I walked around a tree, picked up a 90-inch hard white, has 9 points on it.
No
this
way.
Is the peak. So we picked up 2 180 sets, 90-inch single, all hard white. We're like, oh, my hell, we got to come back to this spot. So I ended up deer hunting in that same spot, shot my first buck with my gun. It wasn't nothing special, just a 3x4, but whatever. So we went back there the next February, you know, hoping to find one of them deer again. Went up right in the same area. I went and walked this little sagebrush meadow that was sitting there. This is like end of February. There's like, you know, a couple inches of snow on the ground. The 185 buck we found hard white, I actually found his next year set brown laying side by side, bloody bases. He's like a high 190s buck. He's got 2 kickers off each side. Yeah, tons of mass. Just a bitchin' deer, especially for the sands. I mean, when you talk about picking up 180, 190 type sets out there, it's anymore, that's pretty hard to do. It's just, it gets hit so hard.
Yeah, you found the biggest deer out there if you're doing that now.
No, for sure. So that's kind of where we started, but we kind of hit the point of where we're like, hey, you know, the best we're going to do out here is, you know, 190, maybe 200. We're like, so let's start hitting the strip. So about that same time, like 2004, 2005, we started kind of, you know, venturing out on the strip, same thing, busting out the old paper maps, you know, trying to figure out roads. And we didn't spend as much time out there as I wish we did that long ago, because the problem with the strip and like finding giant deer horns is you either shed hunt to find horns volume, or you shed hunt to find big horns. You really can't do both. And I think that's kind of what separates those guys, those select few guys that pick up just those giant horns versus the guys that just want to go out and pick up as many as they can. Like, there's nothing against either one. I enjoy picking up any horn, but you really can't do both and be successful at both. You kind of either have to sacrifice. You might go out 3, 4, 5, 6 weekends, spend 2 days, 20 miles a day, get your butt kicked, waste all that time, and you're not finding anything.
Mm-hmm.
Or you go to those places that have lots of deer, you just may not find, you know, that next level size of horn. And that's kind of what we tried to focus more on, was let's stop with the volume. Because, I mean, after you pick up so many, you know, just decent horns, you're like, I need that next level. So, you know, that's kind of when we started focusing on Nevada. I mean, Nevada has volume, but kind of where them big horns are in Nevada, it's kind of really similar to the strip. You can go out and find absolutely nothing. So,
so
I'd say we started to focus on the strip. Like I said, I wish we would have focused more earlier, back before shed hunting really started to blow up. But I'd say around 2010, 2009 is when we started to really to get out there after the strip. And I remember I went out to 13A, and that was back when, you know, Nasty Jack, the 50, Joe Dirt, all them deer were just so famous, you know. And going back to that, trail cameras are gone now, but I attribute a lot of the stuff I found to kill photos, trail camera photos, just any background I could get out of a photo, you know, just get on Google Earth and try to find it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or seeing where they killed it, and I'm like, I know where that is. Like, I'm familiar with the strip. I know right where that is. So then that kind of gives you that incentive to be like, well, I'm going to go out there because that buck's got big horns. You know, I'll start looking for those horns.
Yeah.
So you know, 13A was on fire around, you know, 2009, 2010. Went out there, spent some time with good buddy Trevor Davenport. Me and him used to hit the hills quite a bit together. So we made a trip out there, and I think it was 2010. That's when I found that horn off Nasty Jack. I was with Trevor. I think I actually might have found two horns off of him. I have another horn that few years older. Yeah, it's a few years older than my Nasty horn, but it looks identical to it. And it's probably a 90-inch horn. It has a broken end line. It's a sweet horn. It's just, you know, the low strip horns, for whatever reason, that dirt out there just eats those horns alive. So it's a little rough, but I'm pretty sure it's off of him. But picked up Nasty. It's a big horn. He had a broken cheater, but not broke. He's like 103, 104 as a single. And unfortunately, the year I found off of him was the year he never dropped my other side. There's trail camera photos that show with my set, he drops my horn, and my other side stayed on his head till like the next September or August. So he grew that giant, massive horn that actually just recently got picked up. It's all chalky, but he had that giant, nasty horn, and he had my other side hard horned with like a little velvet claw that kind of grew out underneath of it. And then he finally capped that in like August or September the next year. So obviously I didn't have any luck picking it up, but
That's so crazy. That's such a big, big antler. Like, was that, was that like your first, like, big, big shed? Like, off of a, like a, I guess,
definitely my first
deer.
Horn off of a famous buck for sure.
Yeah.
As far as, like, at the time, I don't know if it was my biggest horn. It was definitely one of my best horns I'd ever found. I think either that same year or the year before is when I picked up that, the 97-inch typical I picked up in Nevada. Same thing, unfortunately. It's just a single. Beautiful hard white. No cracks. No chips. I picked
one up. Yeah, I remember seeing a picture of it, actually. I'm so jealous of that.
Yeah, that horn, that was back in the Monster Muley days. That one broke Monster Muley's website for a couple weeks.
I remember on Monster Muley's watching it, and I think everyone was making fun of, like, your flat brim hat, and I'm like,
oh yeah, I got a ton of crap about my hat.
Yeah, I'm like, how can you even notice that he's holding giant sheds, and that's what you guys are worried about?
Yeah,
I remember
that's
that.
The thing I miss about Monster Muley's. There was just a bunch of middle-aged guys that like to talk a lot of crap. Nowadays, no one talks as much crap as they did back in the day. Cause back then, nobody knew who you were. Monster Muley's, there wasn't a profile pic with a name. It was just like some made-up name, so people like to talk a lot of crap.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so
yeah.
I kind of cut you off on your thing.
No,
sorry.
No, yeah, so Nasty Jack, probably my first real big strip horn. But, yeah, I mean, after that, like I say, I spent a lot of time on Google Earth. I probably spend way too much time. But I honestly feel like the more time I spent, you know, e-scouting, essentially, you know, looking at areas, looking at draws. Once you spend so much time doing that and paying attention to where big deer are killed and spending that same time, like, in that same country, you kind of start to just know where big deer are, like, in general. Like, you know, like, every year, you know, they're killing a good buck here. Like, obviously, there's always, you know, there's always a giant buck killed in no man's land or over here, over there. But, you know, there may not be a lot of deer there. So, I obsessed over seeing the bucks get killed every year. You know, like, that's one thing I wait for is Instagram for everyone, all the guides to post, you know, what deer they killed, because generally you can kind of figure out where that was. So,
yeah.
Skip forward a few years. Dino, I remember I was at work one day just working, and, you know, Instagram blows up, Dino was killed, you know, and it's just like, oh my hell. And instantly from the kill photos, I'm like, I know where that is. Like, I know exactly where that is. So I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to have to put together a game plan, you know. And that would have been, you know, November during the hunt. So I'm like, okay, you know, this next year, spring hits, we have to focus some time on that deer. So that would have been, they shot him in 2017. So 2018 comes around and I'm like, all right, time to hit the strip. So we didn't even really go for Dino on our first few trips. We're just like, let's just get out there and just start hitting as much stuff as we can. So, you know, first trip, we go out to a spot. I kind of just picked out. I'm like, let's go hit it real quick. You know, do a couple little hikes. I picked up like a 90-incher. It's kind of chalk. Just, you know, it was a good day trip. We picked up a couple horns. Next trip we plan, I think my dad and his buddies, they did an overnighter, but I just went out for the day. And they went to hit one spot. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go over here and I'll hit over here. I freaking go out, spend all day, 18, 20 miles. I picked up one dinky little just horn, just a piece of junk. And I knew where they were camping. I'm like, I'm going to go over to their camp, you know, drive over there, pull into their camp. And they just got back, and they're just pulling all these horns out of their trucks. And I'm like, oh, my hell. They had, my dad had a 226 set, hard white, picked up. And he found a horn that was like 92 hard white.
No.
And our buddy Scott Young picked up a horn that I think was like right at 100. And they were actually a set, but they didn't look like a set. We didn't realize they were a set until the deer actually got killed a couple years later. So we didn't think they were a set at the time, but they actually are a set. So there's another you know, 220 type set, and then
oh.
And then like a couple other mid 80 horns. I mean, I'm just looking at that like, oh my heck, I just freaking hiked all day and I picked up a rat, and then I pull into camp and these guys just hit, they just hit a hole, you know, like it was just one of those things where they just went in the right spot at the right time and it was just loaded with big horns. So we're like, okay,
that's so crazy. We're
kind of on a roll. We got to keep it going. So we just kept going out. And, you know, picked up a few more good horns here and there. And then it was end of March or April, right, beginning of April. And I'm like, okay, we have to, like, look for Dino. I'm like, so we hadn't really been where Dino was. We were kind of hitting other spots. And I'm like, we got to go look for Dino. I'm like, it's got to happen because if we don't, I know, you know, the strip gets hit pretty hard. Someone's going to pick them up if they're not even, they might already be picked up. So jump on Google Earth. I'm just looking at where I feel like he was shot, and I'm just looking at all the benches, areas, waters. And I'm like, I had a spot in mind. I'm like, okay, this is my number one spot. This is my number two spot. And I'm like, we should go hit my number two spot first. I'm like, let's just get it over with, and we'll move to number one. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure he's in the number one spot, but whatever. Head out there, get out there, you know, get all parked, whatever, and we just, you know, start hiking, start hitting these benches, hitting these draws. And it only took about an hour and a half into the morning, and I'm cutting across. It's kind of like a tree line. I mean, it's like, you know, you don't get sagebrush in the trees, but it's not really a sagebrush meadow because it's not very big.
Yeah.
I was just kind of walking the trees, and I look over, and this something catches my eye, just something white, you know. So I step back, and I look, and I'm like, oh, there's a horn. Awesome. It's, you know, it's in a bush. Cool. So I start walking over there, and it was back, you know. I filmed a little bit of my shed hunting with a nice camera for a little while, so, you know, pull all my stuff off my backpack, set it up, because it just looked like a good horn. I was thinking maybe a 90-inch horn. Get all my stuff set up, and I start walking over to it, and I'm like, oh, man, that's, wow, that's a big horn. And it looked like his beam was broke, because on my the first side I picked up, his beam was really short. He had kind of a stubby beam. Looked broke, so I'm like, oh, man, I hope it's not broke. And as soon as I stepped over the horn and could see what was in the bush, I was like, oh, my gosh, that's Dino. Holy
no
crap.
Way.
The funny thing was I didn't know what his set looked like because I'd never seen a picture of him other than the year he was dead. I'd never seen a previous year. But you could just see the pitchfork, the inline, the giant hook cheater. So, like, it just – I was like, oh, my God, that's Dino. That has to be Dino. Pull it out of the bush, and sure as crap, it was Dino. And, again, I was just – assuming at the time it was Dino, and call my dad on the radio. I'm like, dude, I just found Dino. I already found him. Like, already got him picked up. This is insane. So he comes over, you know, and we're just like, holy crap! I'm like, it's the biggest horn I've ever found. Like, this thing is just stupid big. So, you know, we're like, okay, we got to start looking to the other side. And we had a buddy coming out to camp. He wasn't even there yet at that point. So do a little bit of gridding. And that's the tough thing. When you find a horn, it's like, what do? Do you start circling? Do you start gridding? That's one tough thing when it comes to picking up horns that I can't decide what the heck to do even after all these years. Is if you just start walking randomly and hope you find it, or if you grid. But we went back to camp.
Ask you too. Well, finish your story and then I'll ask you after. Sorry.
Okay. So, you know, get back to camp. You know, we're just like, don't even know what to do with ourselves. We pick up this horn. You know, so we're like, hey, you know, let's get back out there and find the other side. So, you know, we head back out, and literally within maybe another hour, we had the other side found.
No way.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, found it that fast, go back to camp, you know, eat lunch real quick, which we don't normally do. You know, when we shed hunt, you know, you normally don't even eat lunch. You just hike all day. So head back out within less than an hour, other side's found, and we're just like, oh, my hell. The other side was bigger, which in my head I thought it would be smaller because I'm pretty sure the side I found first when he died was the bigger side. So I'm like, well, the other side's probably smaller. It's probably the smaller side. No, it's bigger. It's all frame, in line. It's absolutely stupid big. So, now we have both sides picked up, and it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So we're like, what do we do now? So we literally just hung out in camp and just, you know, celebrated. Like, what's even the point to go look anymore?
Yeah,
we picked up a 270 plus beautiful hard white set. Like, what the heck do we do now? It was the craziest feeling. But
so if I remember right too, and I could be wrong, wasn't your set bigger than the deer when it was killed? Like, did it go down here a little?
I believe when they killed it, which is crazy because I've seen the dead buck in person. It is unbelievably massive and giant, but it's kind of ugly in a way, which sounds weird that a 290s deer could be ugly. It's just its frame's kind of goofy, but it's giant.
Okay.
So I think dead it was over 290, and my set's just over 270. So it was bigger dead, but my set, I think he's prettier. He's better looking.
Yeah, I agree. Like, he looks like a dream deer. Like, it would be hard to add anything to him.
Yeah. I mean, other than his one side's got that short beam, other than that, I don't really know what you could change to make him any better. I mean, his big side's 134, and his small side is just over 117.
I can't even imagine. Like, I would be losing my mind. Like,
it was
just so big. It's like not even real.
Yeah, and that's the problem. When you find horns like that, it makes it hard to find, like, to want to find smaller horns. And I think as soon as I started picking up, you know, the 90 plus inch horns is why we kind of pivoted from, you know, hitting those areas where you're going to find 20, 30 deer horns in a day to, you might go a couple weeks, but you'll eventually, you know, you're going to find that 90 to 100 plus inch horn because I just kind of lost that passion for just picking up horns, and it kind of turned into the drive to just try to find, you know, them big ones, because it's just like a completely different story.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like actually killing deer too. Like there's people who won't kill a 200 inch deer because they won't kill like a 220, and then it's like when you actually kill like a 220 and you're like trying to describe it to someone, like, it's just not even the same as killing like a 190 buck. It's just like you walk up.
No,
on
100%.
Oh my gosh! Like,
there's just levels.
I
want to
feel that again. Yeah.
100%. And that's the thing. I mean, I'd have to say, like I said, I put in a stupid amount of time into obsessing over wanting to find those types of horns. So I almost feel like you kind of draw it to yourself. When that's all you think about, you know, is a 250 type set, and you put in the time, you put in the miles, you put in those weekends, and you just don't give up. You almost draw it to yourself. I mean, anyone can get lucky. Everyone gets lucky. I mean, I know plenty of people that have gone out and they find a, you know, 220, 230, 240 set right off the road. And it's like, you know, anyone can get lucky, but you got to kind of make your own luck if you want to consistently pick up those big, giant antlers.
Right.
And it just becomes an obsession. Same thing with guys that are those killers. I mean, those people that just kill those monster deer, monster bulls all the time. It becomes their obsession. That's all they care about. So,
yeah,
it just takes a lot of time, though. It's a lot of time, a lot of sacrifice, lots of miles. And you know, you got to just be able to go get your butt kicked a lot, but like just keep going. You know what I mean? I think that's what deters a lot of people. The strip gets hit a ton, but I think it gets hit a lot by, you know, those guys that go out there and they get their ass kicked and they're like, well, I guess let's not go back. Let's go somewhere else. And then they don't go back. But
right. It's just like, I mean, I'm sure you've got hit up, but people are always asking like, I want to shed hunt the strip. I want to shed hunt the strip, so where should I go? And then, like, you never hear from them again, and it's just like,
yeah.
like I if I knew where I could find big sheds, I would be out there. Like, you can, or they go hunt coral pink, like you said, like where they can pick up a ton of sheds, because it's just like anything valuable is super hard, and you obviously put in a ton of work and a ton of effort to get in those spots. Like you said, like, people probably don't realize how many times, like, you go out and don't find a shed.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You put
wild.
In tons of effort.
Yeah, you're either going to be known for picking up a lot or picking up the big ones, and it's just a lot of sacrifice. It's a lot harder now, you know. I'm older. I got a family, so, you know, other things come first. So I don't get out as much as I used to, but it's still, when that time of year comes around, which when I was younger, there was no shed season. It was January to December. You know, we were out there all the time, which is also why we picked up so many good horns, is I never stopped. I'd be shed hunting during bow season, because you go bow hunt, it wasn't any good. Cool, we're going to go shed hunt. So, like, it was nonstop. So, but now, nowadays, with, you know, you get a lot of stuff going on. You got to really dial in those spots when you can break away to try to make the most of it. But it's still, you get your butt kicked quite a bit out there.
Yeah, for sure. So I kind of wanted to break it down to, like, how you do it, because it's just crazy, like, the amount of giant sheds you find. So, like, you get a little bit of intel or info on a buck, and then you search Google Earth and kind of find areas you think he might be. Are you gridding those areas, like, to make sure you cover everything, or are you just kind of walking, or, like, what's your tactic from there?
That's a good question. So it kind of sounds bad, but I don't grid as much as I should, because I like to get into an area and just start covering ground. Mm-hmm. So, like, with Dino, I wasn't really necessarily gridding the area that I first hit. I was just walking, just covering country. I will kind of grid, you know, if you get on, like, a ridge or a finger, I don't necessarily just keep crossing those fingers and ridges and draws. If I hit a ridge, it looks good. You know, it's got buck brush, or it's got some good sign on it that looks like deer are frequenting it. I will, you know, start to grid. I'll try to grid those areas, but I'm more of a just get out the truck, know what's the direction I'm going, what's that direction, and just start covering, ground. If I get into an area that looks good, I will take the time to grid it, but I'm more of a just get out and go, you know, go as far as I can go, which I don't know if that's the right tactic. It might be better to stay in a small area and cover ground, but I just feel like if I start doing that and I'm not finding something, I got to move. You know what I mean? I'm
yep.
not a super patient shed hunter. So I just like to cover as much ground as possible, and it seems to work out for me. I've had some luck doing it. I'm not saying it's the best way to go about it. I know some people that like to grid a lot, and they pick up horns. So I don't necessarily think there's a better or worser tactic. It's just kind of whatever's working for you, just kind of stick with it. But yeah, like I say, the biggest thing for me is just knowing about a big deer if you can. And then trying to focus on where you think he might be. But a lot of big ones I picked up too, you know, I've never even known they were there. So that's the other thing. Some of the best ones I've ever.
For other deer, and then, like, you kind of happen upon them, because, like,
or literally just picking a spot. I mean, a lot of the shed hunting we used to do, we would just literally be on Google Earth and be like, oh, this area looks good. There's a spring here. It looks super thick. Let's just go there. I mean, completely unknowing if deer even shed there, if there's any freaking deer there, period. Like that 97-inch typical I found.
Uh-huh.
My dad was just – he actually went and hit the area in, like, December, the December before I found it. He found a really heavy inline horn, and it's just, like, the thickest, nastiest country you've ever seen. Like, you don't see any deer track, any deer sign. There's really not any water in there. And he's like, let's go back in there. I picked up a big horn, and I didn't want to go. I'm like, dude, let's just go home. It's like the second half of the day. I'm like burned out. He's like, let's just go in there for 30 minutes. I'm like, all right.
So yeah.
Get out the truck. go on a hike, and within 30 minutes, I pick up this just giant, clean, perfect typical. And we ended up picking up a lot of horns, because obviously after we picked that up, we just went back and just pounded it and pounded it. We found that horn he found with the big inline. We ended up finding three full sets and a single off that buck. So we had, you know, seven horns off that deer, just a crazy, cool buck. But like I say, so, you know, if you put in the thought process of, you know, if you're in an area where there's no deer track, you're not in a good spot. That's, for me, I don't even care about deer track. If it's March and you're out there trying to find fresh browns, yes, obviously it's better if you're on the big deer track. But if you're not there, you know, if you're there in summer or late fall or winter, I really don't pay attention to deer sign, which might sound weird, because I've found big horns and there's no deer sign anywhere to be found. So I really don't pay too much attention to deer sign. If it, like I say, if it's March or February and you're hoping to pick up a big brown set, obviously you need to be on, you know, fresh buck track, but I don't pay too much attention to deer sign if it ain't March. I just, you know, put the miles in and hopefully something produces.
Yeah. So are you looking for like a specific like plant they're feeding on, or like water or cover? Like, is there something
water,
you see and you're like, oh, we're in the zone?
I mean, if somebody was, you know, want to know more about it, I do like to be within a mile or two of water. I don't think you have to be right on water, because I've trail cameraed deer on a water source and picked up their brown a mile and a half, 2 miles away. So as long as there's water, you know, within a couple miles, those deer travel a ton. So, I mean, if there's no water anywhere, I probably wouldn't, you know, want to be in that area. But if there's water within a mile or two, I think that's pretty key. And then, yeah, feed, sagebrush, buck brush, grass. I mean, I feel like those deer eat just about anything when they have to, especially with the drought. I don't know what they're eating, because there's not a lot of new food. So it definitely helps. If you see them cliff rose, you know, I know the deer love those if they bloom, if you're getting the moisture. So if you see, you know, a buck brush, cliff rose, patch, I always check them. You know, if I'm hiking and I see a ridge that's got it, I just head straight to it, because inherently that's a good place to go, because, you know, that's where the deer like to be. But like I say, a lot of the time I pay attention to nothing. I just we were so used to just picking a spot on the map, pick a spot on Google Earth, and just go hit it. And that's the thing too, like you were saying earlier, when people say, hey, I want to go to the strip, where should I go? I tell people, I feel like I know too much, and it actually hurts me, because I put too much thought into going. You're better off going knowing absolutely nothing. Just go to the strip.
Yeah, just pick,
you know,
a random water.
Or go to Utah, go to Nevada. Like, just go out there and get out of your truck and go hike, because that's how you're going to find the big horns. No one knows where a big horn is. If they did, they'd go pick it up. You know what I'm saying? So,
right. No, that
kind
makes
of, with that.
Sense.
Yeah, but with that, it's just like, if you want to go pick up horns, you just got to get out. But it just generally, them big monsters, you know, that's about all you'll find. If you find them, too. I mean, I've gone years where we put in the time, put in the miles, just go, and you may not pick up anything big. And, you know, you got to be able to take those butt whoopings and just keep going back. It's just kind of how it is.
So another question I kind of had for you, and this is more like a hypothetical, but like we're so efficient at like killing now, I feel like, and maybe like the trail camera thing helped on the strip a little bit, but like, do you think there's still like those next level deer that make it through that people like just have no idea are alive? Like even in like some of these general units or like on the strip, or do you think like nowadays most, if not almost all deer, either like get killed before they can like really blow up, or if they do blow up, like almost everyone knows about them?
I'm hopeful that, I mean, the strip specifically with the trail cam ban, I'm hopeful that actually does something. I don't see how it couldn't, because I feel like there was a lot of reliance on trail cameras to find those deer, like in those, you know, those thick areas or the middle of nowhere areas where people aren't going to spend the time to glass, but if they get a picture of something, they're going to spend the time. So I'm hoping the strip can come back just because of the trail cameras. It's also been super dry out there. I was just out there last weekend, and it was the driest I've ever seen it, which is not great.
Really?
So, yeah, it was bad. I mean, just about every single pond that we've seen was completely dry. Ponds that I've always seen water were super dry. So the strip, I'm hopeful with the trail cameras, but like you said, people are just so much more efficient now. Like I say, when we first started shed hunting, early 2000s, obviously people were killers, but, you know, I feel like optics have come so far, bows have come so far, long-range shooting, you know, really became a thing. There was scopes on muzzleloaders for quite a while, now they just changed that. But I just feel like you said, people are so efficient with killing, it really impacts those mature bucks. And I don't know, I'm trying to be hopeful that stuff will start to bounce back, but it definitely doesn't look great for the future of big deer. Maybe they'll change some rules, start cutting some tags, and things will bounce back, but that does kind of suck.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's like
about
one
it,
thing
though.
I always think about when I'm shed hunting is like, especially like in just random places, it's like, man, what are the odds like there's actually a deer I would be excited to pick up? Like, you spend so much time like scouting and looking, and it's like I don't know, it seemed like, and maybe I was more optimistic, but like as a kid, you're like, it just seemed like you could like just happen upon a giant, and it seems like at least nowadays it's like you almost have to know about something.
No, 100%. Like I say, the strip used to have 20, 30 deer over 200. Like, it was just known, like, oh, there's 30 bucks on the strip this year, over 200, and there's a couple over 220, and there's a couple over 230, 240. So, like, knowing that, you go out there, and if you're lucky, you find one. And now, I know those numbers aren't even close to that. You know, there's a handful over 200. There might be two over 220. There might be one of them over 240. So when you drop those numbers down like that, then it goes from a needle in a haystack to there's no needle in the haystack. Like, your chances of finding one of them deer, just it definitely makes it very hard. So I'm hoping the strip can make a comeback. I'm hoping Utah can figure something out to help get the deer herd back to what it should be as far as mature deer go. But yeah, that does make it hard to want to go out and focus on finding big deer horns when there might not be big deer where you're at. It's just unfortunate reality of the times, you know?
Right. So I have one more like question about a buck, and we might have to cut this out. I don't know, because I didn't ask you prehand, and I don't really know the story. So, but like, one buck I was always like fascinated with, and then you ended up finding his sheds, is that drama buck. Like,
I'm glad you asked, because it's I was kind of jumping around with my stories, and that was one I skipped. And this whole time I kept thinking, how can I put that back in this conversation without it jumping around all over the place?
That's good, because I've kind of heard bits and pieces, and I've just always been so fascinated. And then I remember like when you picked him up, I'm like, man, how is he doing that? And it's just kind of like a local legend.
So drama, I named him drama because there was a lot of drama involved. So general season buck, I don't even remember what year it was, 2012 probably. I was at work. My dad was hunting up on the mountain. He calls me on the phone, get out of work, get the quad, get up here, tells me where he's at. He's like, get here as soon as you can. I just glassed an absolute giant buck. I just bedded him. I need your help. Drop what I'm doing. Grab everything I can. Just take off. Get up there. Get set up with him. I'm like, hey, where's he at? He's like, hey, he bedded, you know. I mean, we're forever away. He's like, he's clear up here in this draw. And he's like, I'm like, hey, I don't know what to do. Like, it's the evening, I guess. I'll go up there and try to jump him, and we'll just see, you know, maybe he'll come running right down to you. So I go hike up on this hill, and I'm going through all this scrub oak, bushes, and nothing. No, nothing gets up, nothing moves. And I don't know, I've had, in that same area, I've had deer that I watched bed, and I've literally walked right over to them, essentially, and thrown rocks at them. Like, I'm like, there's a deer right there at 20 yards, throwing rock. Third rock, it stands up. So they'll let you walk right by them. They're not stupid. So I don't know if I walked right by him. He never got up, but we never seen him. And then, so that was at, I don't know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So that night, somehow, he went from where my dad seen him and watched him bed, whether he left after we left or he left in the middle of the day, like when my dad was waiting for me to get there. But a good buddy of ours seen him probably half mile, three quarter miles away from where we were, seen him. So somehow he, you know, snuck out from under my dad. So our good buddy seen him, tried to get set up to take a shot at him. And I think he actually did shoot at him. And then another group of guys shot at him. And our buddy, you know, went down there, and these other guys, you know, were like, hey, you know, we hit him. And my dad's friend was like, oh, no way. They're like, yeah, we got him. And he's like, well, congrats, you know, whatever, leave, you know, whatever. So then, you know, supposedly someone shot him. So there was a story going around town. He was killed. He was dead. But there was no photos. No one had seen it. So it was kind of fishy. So like, this is kind of weird, whatever. So that same November, my dad went back up in the area to film rut and deer, and he filmed the buck alive rutting does. So you know, someone was kind of BSing us saying they killed him. They didn't kill him, he's still alive. So you know, he's rutting does. We get him on video. And that year there was actually quite a few good bucks in the rut. So You know, got some good videos, some good deer. So we just, you know, that spring went up there and just pounded it the best we could. Never found him. And it actually snowed a ton that year. Like, if you don't know the area, I'll tell you after we're done. But it snowed a ton. So those deer inherently would be pretty low. So, you know, we spent a ton of time in there hitting up the snow line, hitting in the snow with no luck. So we're like, all right, whatever, you know, I got to give up at some point. So, you know, kind of give up. So then that next, that same, so that the next year we're back up there deer hunting. Deer hunting in the same spot. Don't see that deer, but we seen a pretty good 3-point that had a big old long beam that dropped. It was a pretty bitching deer. So I'm like, well, I'll freaking hike my butt over there and try to go make a play on him. So I clear across this bench, clear up this big steep ridge, get up above these, you know, these big rocks, cliffs, whatever, and, you know, try to get on in on this buck and this thick stuff. And long story short, it doesn't work out. He busts out. I missed him. And I'm like, gosh, dang it, whatever. So I tell him on the radio, I'm like, I didn't get him. He got away. So I'm hiking back down, and I'm at, like, I don't know, high set, like probably 75, 7,800 feet, which is pretty high. Yeah. And I dropped this big wash, big ravine, and I come up the other side, and I'm just kind of walking through this burnt area. And I remembered I had no water. I was just dead, dying, tired. And I just – it was like at the moment it felt like slow motion through the yellow grass. I just start seeing tines. And I'm I'm like, what is that? And it's both sides of drama, side by side, almost touching, just laying there on this bench. And I'm like, what the hell? So I grab the radio. I'm like, I just found drama shit. And my dad's like, don't say that on the radio. So I, and back then I didn't have, I mean, I don't know, I might have had a smartphone. Back in 2012, I probably had a piece of crap phone. Didn't even get a picture, you know, didn't get any video. Just scooped them up, hike all the way back, and we're just like, what the hell? Why the hell were they up this high? Why are they up here? Like, we're just so confused. And kind of a backstory to drama. So, backstory to drama, there was a guy that killed it, and then he didn't kill it. It was alive in the rut. You know, we got video of it. And then it just kept going. There was people that would, you know, he got hit by a car. Someone said, you know, someone found him dead. And then that was actually, I want to say there was a shed ban that year, like where you had to wait till April or May to shed hunt. I can't remember, something like that. So then someone said, you know, a fish and game cop seen the buck and he knew where he shed, but he's not going to tell any. Like, it was just constant drama, constant people.
Yeah.
There, people. And then to go literally, I found him basically right where my dad seen him the year before. So right where he was during the rifle hunt, I picked the horns up. So it was just crazy to be in the same spot that next fall, October, and I'm walking out doing the walk of shame, and I just walk up on a 218-inch general season, just awesome buck. Is just
that you have history with too. Is crazy.
Yeah, it was cool that and I remember the year before that, before we even seen him, someone picked up a brown horn off of him, and it was like, you know, this crazy rumor. Someone picked up this big inline horn up in this area. Then we see him, film him, go look for him, can't find him, and then just literally just walked right up upon it on the rifle hunt. And it was pretty crazy.
That's so crazy. Yeah, I remember like we would always try to go find him on the winter range and stuff, and then like you picked up his sheds, and there's just like so many rumors going around, just different ways he died, and it was hard like not to believe them, because some of them like had some truth to it, like the guys shot at him and whatnot. So
no,
it's kind of
interesting
to hear the story.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. I'll have to tell you more after the podcast, but.
Yeah.
More detail to it, but like you said, it was you were hearing things from people that it was hard not to believe it. But then when I picked him up, it like kind of just killed all the BS. It was just like, no, it was all just bullcrap. It was just crazy. At the time, it just seemed like that deer had so much attention. It was pretty wild. And I mean, it's a big deer. A general deer to be 218 is pretty nuts, but. In my opinion, as a part of my collection of my horns, even his set at 218, I mean, he's nowhere near close to my big horns. He's a great deer, but he's not, you know, he ain't no Joe Dirt, he ain't no Dino, no Nasty Jack. He's not that caliber, but he's a general buck, so.
Yeah,
people,
he kind of has,
you know, people
that,
were,
like, that, where he was, like, kind of has that genetic almost. Like, he's not, like, super heavy, but. He's kind of like a scoring machine with all those inlines.
Yeah, lots of extras. Yep.
Yep. But,
and he sat really wide. He was crazy. Like, he just fanned straight out. Like, his horns almost went completely straight out both directions. I mean, when you look at the video of him in the rut, he had to have been 36, 37 inches wide, and it's almost from beam to beam. You know what I mean? It was crazy how he sat, which also made him – when you see a deer like that, it makes him look even, you know, more giant than he was.
Yeah. he's definitely a general season giant, though. Like, that's,
oh, 100%.
That's so cool.
100%. Yeah, kind of a local legend there for a minute. It was fun. It was cool to pick him up. It's actually still, I think, yeah, it's still my biggest Utah set. I never put a lot of time into Utah other than, like I said, those early years at the Pinks, and there's just not those. I mean, there is. I know people have picked up absolute giants out there, but there's just not that many giants. I mean, you got to hit, you know, the Ponsagon, you know, Oak Creek, stuff like that to find those absolute monsters. I don't know about anymore as much, but back when we hit it, all my biggest horns, you know, came out of Nevada or the Strip for sure.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a lot of good information and some pretty entertaining stories. So I appreciate you taking the time to do that and kind of share some information with us. So.
No, yeah, for sure, man. It was fun. I'm thinking now, I mean, I got like another 100 stories of big horns, so we'll have to do it again. Hopefully maybe I'll find something big soon so we can talk about a new big one, and I'll tell you some more old stories.
That's perfect. Anytime you want to get on.
Hey guys, thanks again for listening. I really appreciate the support. If you guys will leave a review on the podcast, that goes a long way just to help us up in the rankings and help more people find the podcast. So I really appreciate that. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I thought it was a really good one. I think there's a ton to take away from Colby. Obviously, he's doing something right, picking up all those giant sheds. We'll put another episode out soon. Thanks again for listening.